You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello and welcome to Zero Pucks Given, the UK ice hockey podcast. We're in partnership with the Hockey Art Co, hockey clothing for hockey people, worn by the best and hated by the rest. Listeners to Zero Pucks Given, you get a 10% discount off everything site-wide at hockeyartclothing.co.uk. Just use the code ZP10 upon checkout to get your discount. And we've had our sponsorship with Manscaped extended for a month and we have a brand new code. So to get all of your male grooming products from manscaped.com, use the code ZEROPUCKS20. So ZEROPUCKS, all caps, all one word, and then 20, ZEROPUCKS20, and you'll get your 20% discount and free shipping off of everything at manscaped.com. We are also on the Sports Social Podcast Network, the biggest sport podcast network in Europe. So many podcasts from so many different sports, obviously not just hockey, football, rugby, tennis, right across the board. Check out their website to find everything that is there. Welcome along. This is episode 94. We are really flying down. This is actually an extra one that I've kind of snuck in. So the Jordan Lorday episode that was going to be number 95 is now going to be number 96 because we've snuck this one in. So as I started the podcast, it's kind of similar to Danny Myers. I was aware of who this guy was. And the more I've seen of him on social media, the more that I really felt that I wanted to talk to him, actually, and just talk about his career and his life experiences in hockey. And obviously, I've been pushing quite a lot recently that I want a lot of the teams to start streaming their games. I'd like to be involved at some point if I can with that. But, you know, this guy was part of the Sky Sports team when it was on the hockey was on the telly in the late 90s, early noughties. So I'd really loved his input. We did go places, actually, that I wasn't aware of. I did my research, as I always do when I have a guest, but it was mainly into his career, not into his personal life. And what Nick is doing at the moment is an incredible thing that he's setting up for players, and we'll obviously go into that. So, but just before the interview, I wanted to just lay down that there's a little bit of a trigger warning. We talk a little bit about alcoholism and about sort of men's mental health and a lot of deep and dark places. As I say, places that I wasn't actually expecting that we were going. So it's a really interesting interview. We sort of sat in for nearly an hour and we had a really, really good chat. And you guys that are playing the game, you guys and girls that are playing the game, make sure you check out the links that are going to be posted in the YouTube video and on the social media posts with regards to what Nick is doing, because it might just be worth reaching out. So again, it's absolutely here for your enjoyment. It's not sad. It's not depressing. It's just a good sort of talk out of what Nick is doing now to sort of combat what he's been through. So I really have enjoyed my time speaking with him, and I hope you do too. This is Nick Rothwell. Zero Zero Pucks Given in partnership with the Hockey Art Co., with Manscaped Male Grooming Products, and on the Sports Social Podcast Network. Absolutely delighted to welcome Nick Rothwell. How are you doing this evening, sir?
I'm good, Ben. How are you, buddy?
I'm really, really good. Thank you so much for joining me. It's exciting times this time of year. Hockey season's coming towards the close season, the postseason stuff, so it's all
I know,
exciting.
It's like it's so bad because I have this morning routine where I do not want to touch my phone for, you know, as long as I can. But with all of the scores and all the runs for playoffs in the NHL and in all the leagues in the UK, Twitter's my first thing right away. I like get on and I see how, I got a couple of buddies that are playing and I want to see how they're doing and stuff, seeing if they're scoring. And it's an amazing time of the year. I love it.
Yeah, it's for anyone that's kind of like watches hockey in the UK or even if they watch it abroad, playoff hockey is just something different. It's completely different to league format hockey. And it's so exciting.
It is. And it's like, and everyone gets the rush because of the format in the UK, you know, it's not the best of seven series like it is in North America. But it's just something it's visceral. You know, you can feel it and the build up to the playoff weekend, and everyone always loves the playoff final weekend. So, it's a great time of year, and I'm excited for. I'm not going to tell you that my allegiances because I want to try to be neutral, but I've got a quiet cheerleading squad for a few teams and players.
As I'm sure in the UK you've got a few allegiances from where you've played, because for anyone that doesn't know, obviously you've played in this country before, former Guildford Flames, Sheffield Steelers, Chelmsford Chieftains as well, actually, a small
player. Yeah, oh, I had a good time in Chelmsford. I wish I didn't have to leave there.
But the main reason I've got you on today, we're going to chat your career, we're going to chat hockey, and I will get your allegiances out of you. But okay. You are part of this incredible project where you've sort of created this platform for mainly former hockey players, but we're going to sort of, you know, possibly aim at athletes across the board to give them some support after they're finished playing. So the UK Ice Hockey Stick Together Tribe, tell us all about it, mate.
Yeah. Okay. So it is in its infancy, and the title is a working title. I said it the other day that AI created the title and the logo, but I'm not ashamed of that because it's basically been what I wanted to be, is a platform created by the players for the players. Now it's something that comes from just my own personal experience. You know, I played hockey at a pretty good level. You know, I didn't play at the top flight. But it was my life, you know, from the time I was a very young kid growing up in Canada to the time where I faded into this world onto TV and hockey faded out of my life. I always felt like I was a hockey player, and then all of a sudden I wasn't. And you don't realize it at the time because you start getting on with your life and you throw yourself into another career and different relationships and different communities. But I found for myself, those communities didn't keep me accountable. They didn't fulfill my need for connection at the level that playing hockey did, and the changing room atmospheres that everyone, I'm sure you've had every guy on telling what it was like to be in a changing room of a hockey team. And I fell into some really negative coping mechanisms that, once again, I didn't really realize it at the time. It's like the frog boiling in the pot kind of thing, right? You know, it just takes time. So you find out that you're dying. And that was my story. And I'm just in a place now where it's like, there was a time where there was a union in ice hockey in the UK. Tim Cranston led it, and it had a few years. I was part of it, but there was a union once for players. There isn't anymore, as you know. There's no real support network for players. As we know, hockey players, it's not a full-time career in the UK. It's something that it helps pay some bills and some expenses, but most guys, 90% of the guys that play, they play it for the fun of the game. But that doesn't mean that their depth of love for the game, their need for connection, et cetera, doesn't exceed any paycheck, right? So it doesn't matter if you're playing, you know, in one of the lower leagues to one of the top leagues, and that's all around the world. You still have the same connection. And when you leave, you still have the same grief. Mm. So again, it doesn't matter if you played in the Premiership, you know, or Hackney Marshes football. When you stop playing, you still have that same sense of loss. So I want to create something that we are aiming it towards ex-players, but I do want current active players to be part of it too, because one day, and it sneaks up on you, one day you're not playing.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
it's,
Unfortunately, I've never actually played the game myself. My experience was mainly more in football and boxing. But I remember from playing football at 24 and my knee blew out. And that was it. I was done at 24 years old. And I found drinking was a coping mechanism for it, which took me 2 or 3 years to get to grips on that. And then I went teetotal. But like you're saying now, if you get current players in, it's getting it in their head that if you get ahead of this, the fall isn't as bad as you think it's going to be.
Yeah, it isn't. And it doesn't have to be a fall. It can just be a natural progression, right? It's something where the platform will give people tools where, you know, if you're coming into the end of a season like we are now and you don't have a contract for next year, you know, the phone isn't ringing, you're not sure what's going to happen, then I have enough resources and my business partner is a sports psychologist of 30 plus years where we can start to equip people with tools so that, it isn't even a fall. It's just a transition. You accept it as part of the athlete's journey, is that one day you are going to not be playing at that level of competitiveness as you once were.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, I mean, it can be you see a lot in the UK, actually, particularly Canadians or Eastern Europeans that would probably prefer and think they're able to play at the higher levels. But as you say, just to keep the love and keep themselves playing their game, they end up playing in the UK, which, don't get me wrong, it is growing. It's obviously had a little bit of time. You were involved, of course, with the television coverage when it was on in the TV in this country. But I think they all kind of appreciate the levels that it is here. But as you say, that emotional support that you get from the room is the same, whether you're NHL or you're NIHL 2 South, it's exactly the same.
And it doesn't matter what sport, you know, like the accountability that you have in a changing room. And this was something that towards my end of my career was in Guildford. And I was starting to, hang out in the nightclubs in Soho. And I think nobody knew that I was drinking or that partaking in other things. Maybe a couple of guys, but it was just part of that time, you know, the late 90s. But I wasn't in the changing room all the time. And I do know I've been witness to and I've been part of bringing another guy aside who maybe stunk of booze one night. And you're like, you know, man, are you okay? You know, because they're coming in and people have their party nights and everybody, you know, it's culture of the game, but you know, you'd have a guy to at least ask the question, are you okay? And whether or not that guy responded in the way, don't you know what, my wife just split up with me and I'm having trouble like juggling like the late night practices on Tuesday, Thursday, and I'm stressed out. And yeah, I had a couple of beers on the way down, you know, and that was part of the story. People were doing it, but I didn't have, and I knew guys were actually calling out other guys and saying, hey, are you okay? And now again, this is back in the 90s. And I think that's what we miss. We miss a guy. Do people swear on your podcast?
Yeah, it's fine.
People who call you out on your bullshit.
Yeah.
Right. And I was a A1 class A bullshitter. You know, I could charm my way in and out of any situation. And I had no one to say, Nick, you know what? Like I you got on the ice. I could smell a beer on you. You know, what's going on? And even that, it just puts something in somebody to actually question what they're doing, but I didn't have that. So this is what I want to try to do, is to be able to create these atmospheres or these platforms of safety where other guys can actually say, are you okay? And that's why peer support is going to be so important for this, because, you know, I got sober in 12-step recovery, and that is all peer support. Like, there's no doctors, there's no psychologists, there's no therapists. It's literally one drunk helping another drunk. So I took the kind of framework of that, of can we actually get one ex-hockey player talking with another ex-hockey player saying, are you okay? And if the question, if the answer comes back, actually, I need some support, then we will have different levels of support for that person. Now, the idea, Ben, is that what I've also found is that I really struggled in 12-step recovery for the first year and a half. Now, remember, I came into 12-step recovery after a jail sentence in Thurlow Penitentiary in St. Catharines in Southern Ontario, like in a jail with murders and rapists and drug dealers and wife beaters. And I came out of there and someone said, you need to go to 12-step recovery. That was part of it all. I went, I moaned, I cried, I bitched, I complained. I said, if you've been through what I've been through, you would drink too, you know. And you know, leading up to that, there's some hugely tragic events that were happening in my life. And, you know, I thought that was the reason to drink. I didn't know anything about alcoholism. I was a full blown alcoholic. I was going to drink whether or not those things happened. I was going to drink if it was a sunny day or a rainy day. And I was designed to drink. That's what I did. But I just used all of those as excuses. And I went for about a year and a half in those meetings, and I was crying, and I was like, I was just a wreck. And I was like, I was qualifying myself as Nick, still drunk alcoholic. There's a bottle in my bag. And I would go to these meetings with a bottle of vodka in my bag. And it wasn't until I was so broken, busted, death on, like, I faced death. You know, I had acute pancreatitis, liver failure, kidney failure. You know, the doctors were like, literally, I was in the hospital, I think, six times in the month of April. I got sober in May. 2016, and the doctor's like, you know, and all your filters are clogged, Nick. That's why all this green bile comes out of you when you take a sip of vodka. But of course, for me, that was resetting my liver so that I could drink again.
Yeah.
I didn't really understand that was happening. So I really struggled because I was going by myself, and I had no one to hold me accountable. And what happened is when I rolled into those meetings again, I was so broken, and I met two guys, and we're getting sober at the same time. And what we did is we started to text each other and phone each other before a meeting. And we like, let's meet for a coffee. And we'd like all waddle on down, and we were shaking and a mess. And we'd have a coffee and let's go to the meeting. And instead of going home, we'd be like, let's go for a tea. And we would shake in the tea and we'd have it. And then we started to get better and we got sponsors and we were like, what step are you on? And, oh, I'm starting my step four. I'm really scared. Oh, I'm starting my step four too. And we held each other accountable. We had our tribe.
Yeah.
And we were a tribe that was bound together because we had a common challenge. We were dying of alcoholism, and that strengthened our bond. And rather than being like, oh, let's learn how to get sober together, which would be an interest, we were dying. And we formed this bond of connectivity, of accountability. And that gave me the incentive to actually go through with the steps. And then that my life changed, you know. But what I wanted to do is I wanted to give that gift to other people, that gift of accountability. So what I want this platform to do is for, you know, we have a target. We have an aim to get 150 users in the next couple of months. You know, we've got 8 already. So we started. And what we will do is do a lot of questions. We'll collect a lot of data. We'll have a lot of meetings. We'll get the guys giving us their input off of questions so that we can mold the platform for their suitability. But eventually what we'll do is we'll get them into tribes so that they can then, instead of us saying Dr. Jarvis is going to hold a workshop on resiliency, which we'll do every week, a new topic. Instead of, you know, you guys invite going to the platform, it'll go to your tribe. And then it'll be, hey, guys, we got to go to this, right? You know, it's just like going to practice on a Thursday night at 11 o'clock. You got to go because you don't want to let your guys down. Yeah. And that's what we want to create. That, and I think that's the elixir. That's the thing that nobody's doing is there's a lot of platforms out there that have support, but no one's actually creating this accountability that we had when we played.
No, and as you say, when you are playing, I know there's been a massive focus the last couple of years, particularly with men's mental health. We don't forget the women. There's women that play this game as well, may have the same struggles, but with the problem that's been with men is that they don't talk. And we've sort of experienced on this podcast, I've had people on where we've discussed it from other mental health backgrounds and whatnot. And a lot of the younger guys that I've kind of said, even something as simple as, you know, you love playing the game, but how do you deal with it when you step on the ice in front of 1,000 screaming people? How do you deal with that pressure? Do you get off the ice and think, oh, my God, I need a beer? Or because, you know, we still now, the man of the match award is still a crate of beer. Unless you're under 18, of course, where I've seen Cokes and Evians and stuff going out. So it's almost like, as you say, you've kind of got to keep that culture because that's what that's the essence of it all, isn't it? That dressing room culture. But you've also got to make sure that you're all there supporting each other if one person pulls out.
I have to clarify, I'm not anti-drinking.
Of course not.
My story just happens to be that I'm an alcoholic, and people really, like, when I say that I was dying of alcoholism and everything, they're thinking, a lot of people think that I'm trying to fix people who are like me. which is not the case. What I, you know, my alcoholism was over 15 years of, but it started when I stopped playing hockey, where you would never have noticed. Now, not everybody will end up like I did. You know, like I know the numbers of alcoholics, like roughly about 10% of the population are alcoholic. And that means that those 10%, once they take a drink, they can't control the amount they take. And once they try to stop, they can stop for a little bit, but they can't stay stopped. That's what an alcoholic is. And 12-step recovery has got the market cornered on that. I don't want to touch that, but I want to get to the 90% who might be having different relationship with not just alcohol, but substances, food, sex, pornography, infidelity, you know, things that external things that we'll reach for as human beings to fix an interior pain, right? And that pain doesn't have to be capital P pain, right? It can be, well, your pet's sick, or someone broke up with you, or, you know, just something, or you've stopped playing and you have this emptiness inside of you. It doesn't have to be like these, the things of, you know, that a lot of people think that they need to qualify as. Your pain is yours, right? Your pain is your pain. So it doesn't matter what level that is or how you qualify it. Is it, if it hurts you and you're seeking for something external to fix it, that's something where I want to create conversations around and offer people different mechanisms or solutions to that and do it as a tribe. But like I said, I don't want to mess with hockey culture, any sport culture. I think that people having a beer after the game, whatever, you know, whatever that is. I mean, I know the great conversations that people have had, you know, and I think hockey still does have some of that element in the lower leagues, where you can meet the guys, you know, in a pub for a beer and stuff like that. And I certainly did play in that era where, you know, fans and players mixed after the games, and the joy on some of those fans when they were meeting the guys that were out there on the ice, and it was beautiful to watch, you know. So I think that I don't want to change any of that, and I just want to acknowledge that.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I don't think anyone would have a chance of changing that, actually.
It's, no.
Something that's almost ingrained into the sport, even the, you know, the recreational form of the game is called Beer League. I don't think it kind of change it, but...
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Now, as you say, I mean, for those people that could be having those struggles, the fact that you can then almost classify them into a tribe would let them know they're not alone.
Exactly, yeah. And it doesn't have to be, you know, I made a post the other day about, like, who needs support networks. And again, everyone thinks that, when, you know, to qualify for a support network, you have to have something dramatic happening in your life, you know, like you're abusing, I don't want to use abusing, but you're using a substance in an unhealthy manner, that you need to be there. But there's a lot of people that I know that are, I mean, they show up for work. They've got, you know, a balanced life. They've got good family. They've got good friends. They've got, you know, maybe a extracurricular activity. They're checking all the boxes. They're doing meditation work or something to keep their nutrition on point. But there's just something about being in a group of people having conversations that we've lost the art of doing, you know. And those, you've been in a changing room or seen a changing room, I'm not sure, but like there'll be like 18 to 22 guys in a changing room, and there'll be like four or five different conversations going on, you know, and it'll be talking about different things and subjects, but we've lost the art of being able to talk and listen to people. And I think that what happens is you just become, your relationships become less and less deep, you know, when you leave those environments, and you start to manufacture things about yourself in these relationships, because you don't want people to really know the truth, because you don't want to get that deep. So we want to create these spaces where people can have deep, meaningful conversations and support one another. Yeah. And again, it can just be about anything in life. We all, loneliness is killing so many people in big cities, you know, where there's millions of people. You know, loneliness doesn't mean to have to be alone, but it just means you just have no relationship with yourself or other people.
The good things you said about creating, eventually you said it's going to be an app, isn't it? I think to, for the guys to use, that's almost making a good use of this technology that has in turn probably caused this problem.
Ben, you nailed it, right? And that was one of my first ever taglines, is that we're going to use technology to solve a problem that technology has exacerbated.
Mm.
Technology is beautiful, but, you know, when I was in Toronto, I was in a squat by the end of it. And I could still get my booze delivered. I could get food delivered. I could get just silly relationships on dating apps, you know, all of it through here. I would never date, but I could get communication going because I didn't want anyone to see me because I was just so ashamed of myself. But I still did have everything in this thing that I needed. So why can't we use this, you know, and let's say 150 UK hockey players in it, and the creation of 25 different tribes in that, where the app will give, again, people suggestions of things to do. So it'll say, hey, you guys haven't been out for a little while. Why don't you go to this coffee shop for coffee? And then it'll give people suggestions on things to do together too, like going to a spin class or a yoga class or boxer size, whatever you guys want to try to do. And then we'll offer sessions, workshops, that will help give people tools, just to create balance in their lives. And that's something I've known, Ben. I need tools, you know, and they're all there, but am I going to pick them up today? And I know that I've got my tribe of guys who are like, Nick, have you done your work? Have you done your writing? Have you done your meditation? Have you done? I know that because I don't want to let them down, I want to send those little check marks in the morning saying, yeah, done this, done this, done this. Oh, yeah, I did check the scores before I did it. And I admit a little bit of stuff. But it's that thing. It's that technology that can keep us accountable to a group of other people.
Yeah. And that's, as you say, perfectly accountable is the word for it, isn't it? That you can sort of take control of your own destiny, really, by at least tracking it in something as simple as that.
Yeah, that's what we want to do. And by me coming on here now and getting out to the reach of people, that's what I want to let the guys know, is to, you know, I hope we can put a link somewhere in what we're doing. So that,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there'll be links.
Yeah, and people can just sign up to it. I want to keep it a safe place. I want to keep it for players right now, either retired or current. And whether or not we start to look at, you know, other you know, players and coaches, but people who are involved in the game. And then after, as we get the data, the information, the suggestions, the ideas from this group of people, we can then grow it and see how we can make it more inclusive to people. But I want to keep it a safe space, exclusive right now to players, so that we can create the thing that I needed, you know. And that's what I want to try to do. From it, it will grow and into different aspects and to cater for different people. But right now, that's what I want to try to do.
Yeah, no, it all sounds terrific. And we'll put a link to that on YouTube. It will be in the sort of comments section. Facebook, it will be on the thing. Instagram's a bit naff with links, so we'll put it in a story so it can get out there. But so then, going back then to the start of what got you into this game, obviously you're Canadian, so it's kind of like you don't really have a choice. It's like British people drinking tea. I don't actually drink tea. I'm a coffee man. But so what was your start in hockey?
Well, my mom and dad are from Doncaster, and they immigrated. My dad was a teacher, and they had an opportunity to, you know, he just married my mom, and my sister was two at the time, my oldest sister, and this was in 1967. And there was a time for teachers to move to Canada because it was the brain drain and Canada needed teachers. And I think my dad had a choice between Newfoundland or a place called Pontiac, Saskatchewan. And he chose Pontiac, Saskatchewan, which is in the middle of nowhere. Regina is the closest major city, but it's close to places like Swift Current and Valmarie, Calvington. These are places where Brian Trotje and Wendell Clark grew up. So I was right in that kind of hockey hotbed of grinder hockey dudes, you know, and I was like 4 or 5 years old, and we moved to Saskatoon, and I had no uncles or aunties, just my mom, my dad, and my two sisters. And I was my dad's blue-eyed boy, you know, and I was his pride and joy. And he obviously got me skating, and he was an English guy. He didn't know any couldn't skate, but he was a real sportsman. So he got me on the ice at 5 years old. Well, I was on the ice earlier, and I remember I had those little, they're called bob skates, and you tie them to your shoes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I remember my very, very first time I was on the ice, and I'm just clunking around. And I just remember putting my hands on the ice when I fell, and I could remember there were bits of hay in the ice. It's like, it was a frozen barn.
As I and I just remember,
Ben, I just remember crying. You know, I was touching the ice. I was like, ah! And I just remember crying. I didn't talk. I didn't have the words, but I just remember touching the ice and being shocked that it made my hand cold and then bawling. But I started playing, and I was a big rink rat, outdoor rink guy, you know, playing hockey till they turned the lights off. And I just had fun. Like, we would play with frozen tennis balls, and just because they were funner. And I got involved in minor hockey, and I never really wanted to make it into the NHL. I was a big fan of it. You know, I would watch Hockey Night in Canada for a period or two, and then I would be downstairs in the basement, and I would be mimicking all the shots and the moves that I saw. Like, the Islanders in the 80s were my team, and Brian Tracci and Mike Bossy and Clark Gillies, and, you know, these guys were just, they were it. And Billy Smith, the goalie, who used to fight everybody, and he scored a goal, you know, and the rivalry with the Oilers. And I remember I didn't really like Gretzky and Curry, because I thought they were a bit like wussy-ish, because I like the brute of the Islanders. And that was the kind of player I was. I wasn't really talented. I was just told to skate up and down the ice as far as I could, finish my hits and get off the ice. I was a grinder. And then I was going to probably make a triple A team, but I had a couple of injuries, and one of them was a partially dislocated hip. And, that's why I got cut from AAA, just because I'd lost that bit of pace.
Yeah.
And my dad was like, you know, you've got a British passport, Nick. Why don't you go to England and play? And I was 18 years old. I left Saskatoon and I came over to the UK, and I couldn't get on with the team right away. I ended up getting a job at the Doncaster Leisure Dome, where there's like a leisure rink. And Ben, I got that job because, you know, I said I was a master bullshitter, you know, a charmer.
Yeah,
I was that because I needed to be, because they were my defense mechanisms. Because, you know, my dad, whatever, you know, he was my hero. But when he drank, he was an alcoholic. He was a scary guy. So I grew up a very scared child, and I used like manipulation and charm as a way to protect myself. But I did go to Doncaster Leisure Dome, and I said, they said, can you drive the Zamboni? And I said, of course I can. I'm Canadian. And, all I'd ever seen is those things going around and around and around. I didn't even know where the key went to start it, but I got this job for, you know, 12 and a half grand a year in 1989. And I got a mortgage because I dated the mortgage advisor. So I had all this stuff when I was 18, but I had no real management skills. And then eventually I ended up in Milton Keynes, and management, I mean, managing my life. I didn't know how to pay bills or to be responsible or anything like that. But I got my point is, I got a lot of stuff very fast. And then I got a job in Milton Keynes, doing the ice there when they opened up in 1991. And, I got on the ice a couple of times. Patty Scott, who just passed away, some real fond memories of getting on the ice with him. And, Troy Kennedy, and they were my idols. I loved those guys, and I was like, I really want to play hockey here. And I just started to try a little bit harder and work out when I could. And I eventually I got a chance to go to the Isle of Wight again in 1991 with the woman who ended up being my wife. She was a professional figure skater, and she set up the skating there, and I was left setting up the hockey and asked to find some imports and stuff, and ended up with Dan Sweeney and a guy named Dave Cannon. And we had a couple, you know, so a lot of, and then I ended up in Sheffield. Funny enough, I put that team together, and then I ended up in Sheffield. I think I played about 18 games up there, and I left Sheffield. Like, I loved Sheffield, and it was great, you know, and Dave Sims used to call me the pretty boy, and I kind of had this section of fans that the pitch kind of went up a little bit when they cheered. but it was fun. I was just a young kid, and I was trying to get better again, but I was just a grinder. And there was a lot of talented British kids, and I got classed as a British guy because they couldn't. Well, again, this is something that happened to me in Canada, Ben, is that I had a bad temper. So in my last couple of years of minor hockey, I got into some trouble with the coaches and just my temper and lashing out, and I fought and stuff. I was an idiot. And but they didn't register me as a hockey player, and I ended up playing some junior B hockey, and they didn't register me. Oh, so I was playing illegally, right? But when I came over here and they looked for my ITC card, Ken Taggart was driving the initiative to get me here. He's like, well, I'm trying to find your ITC card. We have no record of you playing in minor hockey in Canada. So I played as a Brit.
That's why you're not an import.
So my value went skyrocket. But unfortunately, I seemed to piss off Ronnie Wood in Sheffield, because I went in there and asked for my check one day, and I pissed him off, and he said, hit the road, Nick, and that's how I ended up in Chelmsford.
Yeah.
So that ended up my career in Sheffield. And then I ended up in Chelmsford, and they Brad Doshan was the coach there, and I had some Rick Smith was playing, Carl Goebbels, and great guys and great team. Mark Hazelhurst, some really good hockey players. Mark Dowds was the goalie, and not Roberts, because I always get those two mixed up when I was on TV. And they just didn't have the budget to pay us, so I ended up back on the Isle of Wight. And then I had some amazing, amazing years on the Isle of Wight. And that's when I put myself through university. I got a degree in English literature and history. And in that final year, Sky started covering the hockey on TV. And I was like, I'm going to call the producer. And I called the producer.
Really?
Out of the blue. Yeah. I was watching a game at Dan Sweeney's house. And it was the first year they were covering it. I don't think it was the Super League then. I think it was going to become the Super League the next year. And I was at the Tricia Tolchard, producer, came up the end. And I didn't tell anybody, but I went home and phoned her the next day at Sky Sports. And this was when you could phone a network, right?
Yeah.
There was no switchboard. I was like, can I speak to Tricia Tolchard, please? And I said, Tricia, my name is Nick Rothwell. And by this time I was playing for the Guildford Flames. I said, can I come and watch you make a show? Cause I'm doing a media class at university. Now, of course I was lying, because I'm doing English literature and history. But this lie basically gets me in the door, and they didn't have a position for me then. But that summer they started to go into the Super League, and they had their on-air team, and they had them all picked. And 2 games into the season, the boss of Sky said, I don't want to see that rink reporter in Vision again. And she only had one option, which was to phone me. And I had started a job in London as doing sales for Houses of Parliament publication.
Yeah.
I hated it. I showed up on a Monday. This job sucks. I did a week. And then the next Monday I show up and I get this phone call from Trish. She said, like, you know, can you come and meet the boss of Sky Sports, a guy named Mark Sharman at the time. And he wants to talk to you. And I was like, yeah, sure. So I lied to my bosses in this sales position, and I went in on a Tuesday, and they said, you know, do you want this job? And I was like, well, can I watch you make a show first? And he was like, no, you say yes or no now. And dude, the offer was more money for one day's work than probably the highest paid player in the league, for a week. Yeah, it was ridiculous money, all expenses paid. I had a suit budget to go to Savile Row and buy suits with a stylist. You know, I thought, wow, I've made it, you know, and I packed all my stuff up. I left the Isle of Wight and I moved to London and started my own production company and I had my own TV show and I had all this stuff. But, I'm going to be honest, I was trying to juggle playing hockey in Guildford, and this is where we started, which is like just juggling hockey and being on TV. And I obviously wanted to go with the TV because it paid more and I didn't have to get my face hurt or bones broken or anything like that. And it was just the limelight was there, right? It had me. I wanted it.
And you were still involved with the sport as well, which of course just keeps that.
Well, I thought wasn't going to be a problem. But inside of me, I hope people can understand this, is that you think, Nick, you know, I was earning 6 figures a year. I had a Porsche. I had a flat in Chiswick. I was dating a beautiful actress. Yeah, you know, my co-presenter was Gabby Logan. The BBC presenter, and she was my co-presenter, and her best friend, I was dating her best friend, who was this beautiful actress girl, and like everything was perfect. But inside of me, I would look in the mirror and I'd be like, Nick, you don't deserve any of this. none of this is, you lied all your way through this. You don't deserve any of it. I didn't believe that I had talent. I just thought that I bullshitted my way into the job because of all of that fear that I had no self-esteem. I had no self-belief, even though I could get on TV and I could be like, hey, everybody, welcome to the show. Inside, I was a crumbling little, I was a scared 8-year-old boy. And that's when someone, you know, introduced me to a line of cocaine and a martini and in this nightclub in Soho. And all of a sudden I felt like a man, you know, I was like, oh, all those fears went away. Oh, I could breathe. I could relax. I fit in. I could just, the charm just became nuclear, you know, but more importantly, the fear went away. And that hooked me. I was like, I want this. Cause I never drank as a player. You know, I saw my dad and I was like, I don't want to be an alcoholic. I don't want to be like him. I don't want to drink. And the taste of alcohol, the feeling of alcohol, I just tried to stay away from it. But when that combination of the two and the suits and the shiny watches and the nice cars, like that just got me. And I was on that downward slope, buddy.
I mean, to be fair, that can be as addictive and poisonous as any other substance, really, can't it? Success could be possibly the worst drug.
Well, especially if you feel like you don't deserve it, you know. And then I just, you know, like sky stopped covering the hockey. The girl left me. You know, people didn't want to be around me as much because I just wasn't myself. You know, I was you wouldn't see me and say, Nick, you're drinking, you know, but it was, something was missing in me. That light had gone out.
Yeah.
And that from the age of about 30 to 45, you know, I moved to LA, tried to work with Fox there. I moved to Canada, tried to work with Fox there, and I just couldn't hold a relationship. I had no one to hold me accountable. And again, as I said, my relationships became less and less deep. They just were surface level relationships. No one to say, Nick, you know, come on, man, like knuckle down, hit the gym, stop going out the night before you got to do something. None of that. For 15 years, that slide into like the depths of alcoholism and the loneliest places I've ever been.
Well, yeah, I mean, as you could say, you went quite sort of close to the top, and then it was a tumble down, wasn't it, I suppose?
It was that slow slide, you know, frog boiling, you know, frog in the water pot. You just don't get it. You know, it took 15 years of that grind, you know, and being in places where anybody else would have asked for help, but not anybody else. Here's the other thing, Ben. I had no language to ask for help. I didn't have the emotions, the language to say I'm struggling, even though at 30, 31, you know, I knew something was wrong, but because my dad, which what most of our dads taught us, right? And they believed in it. Nick, don't show emotions. Don't let anyone see you cry. Don't ask for help. These are all signs of weakness, and someone will take advantage of you if you ask for help. So I had that in corporate world. I had that in sporting world. I had that in all my relationships. I was dying. Just like voices, Nick, ask for help. Ask for help. Nuh-uh. And it took for me to be, you know, at death's door, where I finally said, help me, to somebody. And that was in 12-step recovery, and the guy helped me. But this is what I want. And, you know, we were talking about men's mental health.
Mm.
Because we don't have that emotional dexterity in the language to say, help me. Of course, everyone knows those words, help me. But when I say we don't have the language, we don't have the presence of mind in those moments to ask for help because we feel we're going to be judged. So I want to create a system in this platform where the peer-to-peer support, we reach out. See, my role in life now is to be active, to look for people. Like, I don't wait for people. Everyone knows I'm sober. Everyone knows that I can sober coach. Everyone knows that I can sponsor in 12-step recovery. I don't wait for people to come to me. I go and I see signs. You know, I see signs on Facebook and I see signs here and there and when I meet with somebody, and then I will pull people aside, and I'm not going to ask someone how they're doing once. I'm going to ask it 3 or 4 times,
yeah,
and in different ways until we can get that little crack. Because again, you know, people talk about people who take their own lives and why don't they ask for help? I was slowly committing suicide. You know, when you have acute pancreatitis and your diet is straight vodka and peanut M&Ms, I didn't give a shit if I woke up. And I knew every drink, my pancreas and liver were just, they were shutting down. And I didn't give a shit. I was like, I kind of I will never say I'm suicidal, but I didn't care if I lived or died.
Yeah.
I don't want to, you know what I mean? I don't want to dishonor, you know, when people do to make that decision. I wasn't there, but I was at the point where I didn't care if I lived or died. So I want to be able to create a support network where guys will actively reach out to other guys and say, are you okay? How are you doing? Are you sure you're okay?
Yeah.
Really? Let's meet for a coffee. You know, I can sense something's off. And whether, and we can teach people how to reach out. But the idea is to make people proactive and asking for help. And I have a list. I have a list of guys that I'll go through and I'll be like, you know, you haven't talked to so-and-so in a while. You've been posting on Facebook and a bit, you know, just reach out to them, make sure they're okay. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're not. 9 times out of 10, they're like, Nick, I was thinking about you. Thank you for reaching out, you know, and then we can get conversations going. And I think the beauty, we talked about a little bit earlier, Ben, what we're doing now, the art of conversation has been lost. And the safe spaces for people to have honest conversation, they're disappearing. So we need to create them. We need to nurture them. We need to get people on board so that they can start taking part in these conversations.
And is that the last? This is a phrase that not many people like. We've discussed it on mental health episodes on here. If these are the definitions and the last traits of toxic masculinity.
So toxic masculinity is funny because I like to call it a balance in masculine trait, in imbalance in masculine traits. Calling the ability, like for me not to be able to ask for help toxic, I don't want to say that. I want to say that I have an imbalance in my emotional state. And these are conversations that I like to have with guys because this starts the process of unlearning some of the things that we've been taught. Masculine traits and feminine traits are actually traits, right? Masculine traits tend to be structure, order, law, science, mathematics. Feminine traits tend to be vulnerability, compassion, nurturing, the arts, music. So those are traits. And really what we want to try to do is be a balanced human being. It's the yin and the yang and the serpent in the middle. We need to be that serpent. And I'm not saying we all need to be snakes, but you get the metaphors, right? We need to create a balance in this. But I would say it's not a male problem. It's not a female problem. It's a societal problem that we're all in this masculine heaviness, right? And we as a society need to pull ourselves out of it. In indigenous cultures, they talk about the eagle that flies with one wing, you know, the masculine wing. You just go fly around in a circle and circle and circle. You need both. And I believe we're in a time now where more compassion and vulnerability is needed. But also, I hear it in you. You know, I hear it in the other guys that are doing the podcast. There's vulnerability and there's compassion in there. And you guys are holding conversations with people around mental well-being that wouldn't take place a while ago. So keep doing what you're doing. Talk to people about mental well-being, well-being, because it's all connected, right? We're all mind, body, soul. It's all one. We're just a race of people that are imbalanced. We're a society that's imbalanced. And I think it's on the way back. We just need to hold each other and nurture each other. And I think if we all hold each other, we rise together.
Yeah. Yeah. Brilliant. I 100% agree. I think you've opened my eyes quite a lot actually, because a lot of the stuff that we've spoken about, I didn't know. So I like to do my research when I have anyone on the podcast. So I did my research more about your career and doing it on the telly. And then obviously when I mentioned earlier about me drinking after receiving an injury, I had no idea we'd end up going down that path. So can I applaud you, sir, actually, on how open you are talking about it?
Well, it's just you and me having a conversation right now. I'm really thinking about it. You know, it being a podcast. And I think that's the, you know, you do a really good job at making that happen. You make somebody feel very comfortable. So,
thank you.
You know, yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you. Now, so something I did actually want to touch on with you, obviously with your time on Sky, it's something that I've been trying to push on here. I want a lot of the clubs in this country to start streaming their games on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
If not for charge, for free to start with. And then when the product is right, maybe they can sort of start charging, start getting some sort of come finance back for it. But Where do you sit on that? From being where it was on telly, obviously Sky had it for a little while, and then whether they found that it wasn't financially viable to keep it. Do you think, again, now that we have this technology, we should be utilizing it?
I think some of the idea of streaming is obviously great to get it out to your fan base. It's also a good revenue stream. The idea of growing the game is not through streaming individual clubs. The idea, you know, if you want to grow the game, you need a network like a Sky Sports, you know, to take it on again. And I know there's a couple of GMs in the Elite League that would probably forfeit their streaming revenue for it to be on national TV. And then there are others who are like, we make six figures off this, you know, like I'm not giving this up. And Sky, we were very intrusive when we went into a ring. So we wanted the camera gantries, commentary gantries, presenting gantries. We took up seats. So we would go into places like Basingstoke and Bracknell in the beginning, and we would take up revenue, you know.
Yeah.
Sky never gave the league, the Super League, any money, but they put on a heck of a show that cost them about £30,000 per show. And this, again, is in 96, 97, 98, 99, 99, 2000. Those were the years, I think, that I was involved. And 30 grand a show is a lot of money. But then what happened was Ian Taylor was appointed the chief executive or whatever. I don't know if it was CEO or chairman or whatever of the Super League. And he saw the success that Sky was getting, and it was bouncing into the success of the team. And the Seconda came on board, and they were sponsoring. And I believe what happened was that he went to Sky Sports and said, thank you for doing the 30 grand, but we want the 30 grand a week plus £1 million.
Wow.
And I remember the story that I heard was, I think it was either Andy Melvin or Vic Wakeling. They were the bosses of Sky. They just laughed at him. And they were like, on your bike. And typically what happens in British ice hockey is the league ends up stabbing itself in the foot, you know, which has been the norm for the 30 years that I've been a part of it. It's been me and my business partners at the time, when I was at Sky, we had a successful company, and we went to some very, very big companies in London and said, would you sponsor a magazine show? We want to do a highlight reel show. And we, you know, we had Mia Tagg do it as a presenter, and we had an amazing director, and we were going to make it look real cool. And they were like, British ice hockey, sorry guys, we're not going to touch you guys with a 10-foot pole. And the words then were that none of you guys, you're a snake eating its own tail. Yeah. None of you guys are, all the owners are, no one's pulling on the same, singing on the same hymn sheet. It's all about the individual success.
Everyone's getting
the team
in their own way, isn't it?
Yeah. And until it's unified, you know, and you got to think about hockey. Like, there's a couple of teams that can make money because they've got this seats. The majority of teams, they're going to break even or lose, right? And until, I don't know if the NHL still do the revenue sharing, but I know there was a time when, like, say the Rangers were playing against Carolina, and it was a TV game. The Rangers obviously are going to be the big money team, but they would have to pay Carolina some money, and they revenue shared it. I don't know what the revenue share system is like anymore, but, you know, until something like that happens in this league, you know, and I can imagine there's going to be two owners that just turn this off if they listen to it. But until there's some kind of revenue sharing or some idea to get, you know, a broadcaster on board and hopefully one that's not behind a paywall, then the sport is going to stay the way it is. And for many, they're going to be cool with that. But for guys like us, and we watch GB doing what they're doing,
yeah,
and punching way above their weight, you know, with amazing hockey players that deserve national attention. You know, the John O'Phillips retiring now from Great Britain, you know, this guy, you know, like, that guy deserves like a spot on Question of Sport, you know, and to be like a noted, you know, in as great, all those athletes on the GB team, they need to be noted as athletes of Great Britain, and they're not, simply because of the politics of the game. And that's what hurts us, you know. And so my feeling around streaming is, yes, do it, you know, get to as many eyeballs as you can. But hopefully, you know, however it happens, they all can get on the same, why can't I say it, hymn sheet,
yeah.
You know, and sing the same tune, which is like, we don't need to grow the game. We need to nurture the game. You know, we need to make sure that everybody involved, and I have this phrase about is maximizing everyone's experience, you know, and that doesn't mean you have to make it through an elite player pathway. That doesn't mean that you have to, you know, just sit back here and not do anything. It means that you want to come to ice hockey. We want to maximize your experience doing it. And I really believe, Ben, that if what I would love to be able to do is empower the athletes, you know, is if we can get them into this platform, get big enough, you know, then they're going to have a voice.
Yeah.
They can start saying the things that they need, you know, and I believe in a power up system, not a power over system. And this is taught to me by my business partner, you know, Dr. Jarvis, is that we are in a society, in a system that is threat based. You know, we get it at work. We get it in sport culture, which is a coach who's got somebody looking over them and saying, you, if you don't perform, you're going to lose your job. If you don't score this many points, you're riding the bench. You know, if you go get a penalty, then you got to give me 50 pushups. If you don't go, you know, skate the boards 30 times after practice without puking, then I'm going to make you puke. You know, it's this, it's a, and a lot of people think this is about creating resiliency, but really it's creating fear. And no athlete, no coach, no one performs when they're in fear state. It's just all reaction. It's never response. You don't thrive. But if you can create a power up system where, you know, players are empowered, they feel safe, they feel secure, they feel joy in what they're doing, then everybody flourishes, you know, and there are some extremely resilient, tough, tough people who operate like this. Phil Jackson, one of the greatest coaches of all time, you know, he doesn't get enough notoriety for how good he is, you know, but this was a guy who gave power to the players. And he just managed them and held them, was vulnerable with them, gave them tools, gave them different ways of just being themselves, you know? And I think that, you know, if we can, again, create a platform that gets guys together where they can start to have a voice and some power, that can only be a good thing.
It can, indeed. It can. Nick, we've taken an hour of your time. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. We've covered an awful lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I just want to thank you once again for joining me. It's been really, really great.
Ben, thank you so much for joining me. And if anybody's listened to this, get in touch, you know, through the links, through any ways that we can, we'll put them in. But, you know, let's get this platform going. Let's get your voice, your wants, your needs, the things that you've had challenges with, the things that you found have worked for you, because, you know, you're not just going there to get support, you're going to give support. So get in touch with me. Let's get 150 users on this thing before the end of the season if we can. If not, let's do it by the summer. But that's the end. Get 150 users on this platform and help support one another. So thanks, Ben.
No worries. Guys and girls, listen out. And if you want more details, click on the links or contact Nick directly. I'm sure he'll be – oh, there's my dog appeared in the background. He'll be
he wants to join. He's going to be the mascot. Yeah.
Nick Rothwell, thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, Ben.
A huge thanks to Nick for joining me on the podcast. We'll be keeping in touch. We'll be hopefully, you know, with Nick's experience as well with what he's done in the sports media world, it might be something where we can push Zero Pucks Given forward a little bit into sort of becoming a little bit more of my true ambition, which, as he said, was kind of like a, you know, a highlights reel magazine type show for the division that I like to cover. It's, you know, there's no point trying to cover the whole thing. No one has that much time. So, yeah, you never know. But a really interesting chat, and what a gentleman, what stuff he's been through and come out the other side and still with a smile on his face and still with love for the game. So, yeah, loved every second of that. So a massive thank you again to Nick. Again, as I said before, make sure you check out all the links. There's links in the YouTube. If you look under the video here, there'll be links in the comments. And if you're listening, there will be links on the Facebook page, in the Instagram stories. And there will also be links. You hear my dog barking in the background there. She's been here all night. There'll also be links on the social media posts and on the Instagram stories as well, so that you don't miss it as well. So thank you so much for joining me. Really did enjoy that. That's three episodes out this week, so another busy week here at ZPG. Next week on Monday, we'll have the roundup. We've got a busy, busy weekend. 7 games going on this weekend, 3 on the Saturday, a full programme on Sunday as everybody finishes their league and their Britain Cup campaigns before we head into the Easter weekender for the playoffs. What an exciting weekend that is going to be. And we will bring you all of the action. It'll finish on the Sunday night at about 9 o'clock. Come 7 o'clock on the Monday, it will all be here ready for you to listen to. Hopefully with as many coaches' thoughts as possible. And seeing who that Final Four is going to be that are going to head to Ali Pali on April 6th and 7th. So, yeah, really looking forward to that. There was a little bit of news, actually, that came out this week from the South 2 that the playoff quarterfinal there between the Guildford Phoenix, the league champions, and the Solent Junior Devils is going to be a one-game shootout at the Spectrum. Something that's happened a couple of times in this league already, just the lack of ice time. These guys aren't able to actually get their two-legged games over the line, and they ended up having one-game shootouts, which I suppose does create a bit of drama, but it could just devalue the competition ever so slightly that it's not being played the way that it should be, which, you know, kind of people spoke when they said about, you know, doing this joint playoff finals between one and two, is it devaluing either league? You know, I don't think it is. I think that doing that is having the one game shootout. But obviously, if there's no ice to play on, should it be perhaps somewhere neutral? But there's not really anywhere between the two, apart from Basingstoke, I suppose. But that's not really in the position to be hosting as a neutral venue at the moment. So, which, funnily enough, I was in Basingstoke the other day, and it just seems like they're not even starting on doing anything, which is such a shame. You know, that rink is a great, great arena. It's on a great little leisure park. There's loads to do around there. And they just need to get that sorted so that the National League can have the Bison back. Although I've got to say, I'm quite enjoying having Jordan Lauderdale and Jay King at the Chieftains. But obviously then so the Buffalo can sort of, you know, have more people in as well. But yeah, it really would be nice to see them start to get that sorted, especially as we head to the end of this season now, where we're expecting it to be a one-year hiatus for the Bison. It looks like it's going to be a little bit longer than that. But anyway, thank you so much for joining. Really have enjoyed this episode. It's been a really great busy week getting all these episodes out. You can catch it, of course, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, where if you subscribe, you'll get a little notification every time that an episode comes out, so you won't miss anything. And exactly the same on YouTube. You probably have a YouTube account if you don't even know you do. If you've got a Gmail address, you can log into YouTube with that. And then you can subscribe to the channel, and then you'll get a notification every time we put a new video out so that you won't miss anything at all. And you can follow, of course, on all the social medias, Instagram, X, Facebook, Threads, Snapchat, TikTok. We're there everywhere. Search for Zero Pucks Given, and I'm sure that it will come up. If not, you can hit the little link tree in the bio on the Instagram, Facebook, and the Twitter, and that brings up all the links to everywhere that you can find something to do with the podcast. Once again, a massive thank you to Nick Rothwell, and a massive thank you to you guys for listening. Have a great weekend. Support your teams. Get behind your boys. And I will see you next time.
Sports Social Podcast Network.